A good friend of mine was killed this week. She was going home from a play in Chicago with her daughter-in-law, with whom she had had huge difficulties and with whom she had just made peace. She'd gone back to Chicago to make peace and mend some fences that had been broken. Diana was a member of a Saturday night community that I've been a part of for about 12 years. And she was irritatingly cheerful. You know those kinds of people? She was a psychiatrist. And at first, her patients, her clients, were the richest of the rich. She had a big practice in Wisconsin. And when she came to Tucson, she lived at the Desert House of Prayer and had one room of her own. She was very wealthy, rich, I would say. And she lived in that place for a year, trying to discern her next right steps. Diana was open about her own mental illness and the medications that she took. She was an anxious person, and she never was quiet. And so sometimes it was hard to be in her presence. Sometimes at our community gatherings on Saturday night, we'd be talking about something heartbreaking, and Diana would pop in with something that was either irrelevant or sort of felt like maybe it diminished the gravity of what we were talking about. Chirpy. And we would all go, "It's Diana," you know. If you sat with her, she'd go on and on and just, you know. And she also did amazing things in the world, quietly. When Dr. Shabani was here, a refugee from Congo, I called her and told her he needed a letter attesting to his psychiatric health for his asylum. She got another physician and she got an interpreter and she did a 14-page document that his attorney said was the best she'd ever seen. He still lost his request for asylum. Diana, also a member of our congregation, needed some time away and needed a place of her own. Diana had an apartment that she rented for $1,000 that she had rented for somebody and then they'd left, but she had a lease. And she let this person stay there for half of what she paid for her rent. Diana showed up every time I called her when I was in the hospital with someone, with Wren and Florence Davis. She could be fierce, as much as she could be an airhead. Diana was coming home from a play on Wednesday night after she had made peace with family members, had gone to Chicago to decided that she was going to finally marry the man that she had kind of pushed and pulled for 11 years. And she was struck by a car that was fleeing a policeman and killed. She was 66. So I've been thinking a lot about Diana and her strategy for living and thinking about this text this morning of Jesus asleep in the stern of the boat. The story tells us that Jesus, Mark's gospel and Luke's gospel as well, Jesus goes back and forth across the Sea of Galilee a lot. On the left side, as you look at the map, the Sea of Galilee, or the west side, were the Galileans, the Jews. That was Jesus' peeps. That was his community. And on the right side were the non-Jews, sort of the unknown territory. And he went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it seemed like just when he was building a crowd and people were starting to pay attention to him in Galilee, he'd get in the boat and cross the Sea of Galilee, which is no easy passage during the daytime. We have stories of him going to Tyre, where he meets the Syrophoenician woman, and to Gerasene, where he meets the Gerasene demoniac in the tombs. He goes to places, liminal spaces, and geographic boundaries where others don't go, and he abides. He listens. He's with the people first, and he heals, and he casts out demons, and he preaches and he teaches by the way that he lives. And he gathers momentum on both sides. We remember that the Sea of Galilee was highly prized by the Roman Empire. that the emperor wanted that natural resource rich in fish and fish oil and cheap labor and was exploiting it. And so the metaphor of Jesus crossing that sea over and over again was kind of building a web, right, between people on both sides of the sea that were going to be exploited. And his disciples were mostly fishers. They knew what was happening to them and to the fish. They cast their nets and they brought in rocks. They knew that the exploitation of Rome and the complicitness of the Jewish leadership and the laws, the highly held to laws of the religious leaders and also of Rome, they knew the impact on God's people. Jesus was a prophet in the borderlands. And he didn't just go into the borderlands and take the good news. The borderlands came to him, as was the case of the hemorrhaging woman, the Canaanite woman, who found him and touched him, who crossed his borders of what gender relationships were supposed to look like and what the purity code said. This is a story about being church in the borderlands. We don't know why Jesus chooses to direct his disciples and others in boats, the story tells us, to get back in their boat at night after they're exhausted. He's healed the man with the withered hand. He's healed Simon Peter's mother-in-law, the lowest of low in the family ranking. He goes into her bedroom and touches her and lifts her up. He's breaking all kinds of norms, and he's creating enemies, just as he's also creating a following of people who can't get enough of this. And so he leaves Galilee, and in this story, he's crossing at night. Was there danger there? The crowds are on the shores, and Jesus gets into the boats with the disciples and others and heads off at night, the most dangerous time. Fishermen and women do not go out in the night to fish, not on that body of water. And it says a wind comes up, a huge wind, and it's tossing the boat around, and it's literally bounding on the walls of the boat. There's been a boat found at the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. It's about 8 meters long. It was an open boat, probably had maybe four people with oars, two or four people on each side, and a rudder. May have had one square sail, but it was wimpy in the face of this storm. And Jesus is asleep on the cushion in the stern. Excuse me? I mean, Jesus is asleep? What's he thinking about? He's taken his disciples into dangerous territory. They're out on the sea. The boat is literally rocking. We all know those times in our lives and in our church and certainly in our country and our world where our boat is being rocked and we are afraid. Fear is being fed to us now. Fear has been fed to us, a country basically built on apartheid, fear of the other, fear of people of color, fear that we're going to lose our privilege, fear that there's not going to be enough to eat, fear if we invite those people to the table, welcome those people to our churches, we're going to lose our seat, our pew space, fear of death. Woody Allen's quote of, I'm not really afraid of death, I just want to don't be there when it happens. Something like that, paraphrased. Of course we have fear. That threat, that thing that threatens to sink our boat. Jealousy, envy, greed, hostility, broken relationships. The boat as each one of us having our own personal boat sunk. The boat as church. The boat is our nation and world. Certainly, there's a hurricane going on, and I'm telling you, the eye of the hurricane is pretty small. The boat is a key to life and soul-saving spiritual practice. The eye in a storm that we're called to always push and push and push until it gets bigger and includes more people, the boat as hope. While Woody Allen says, I'm not afraid of death, I just don't want to be there when it happens, Eleanor Roosevelt says, do one thing every day that scares you. Emma Donoghue, in the book Room, about the 5-year-old boy that grows up in a room with his mother, says, "Scared is what you're feeling. Brave is what you're doing. Brave is what we're doing when we come to church and when we step outside of this room as we leave." Jesus shows up in liminal spaces in Mark, sites of transition or risk. This is no comfortable place. Sure, we can come in on Sunday morning. We've gotten dressed. We're comfortable. We love the hymns. But this work that we have to do together is risky. Jesus chooses to go to the edges of social norms and away from life's regular patterns. He goes to a graveyard. He goes to a deathbed. He reaches across gender divides. Spirit leads him into geographical borderlands like the wilderness or mountaintops. He also goes to socio-political borderlands, politically charged locations like the bedside of Simon Peter's mother-in-law or a tax collector's home and the land outside of Jerusalem during Passover. My doctoral thesis was on being church in the borderlands because that is what we're called to do. And in this story, the borderlands is the Sea of Galilee, where the disciples find themselves almost thrown out of the boat. Their own fear of changing. What is Jesus going to do on the other side? What are they going to be called to give up? What's it going to be like? Will they be hurt? They might even die along the way. If I go to that protest, what if there's a shooter out there? What would happen if I stood up in my organization where I've signed something that says, "I will never tell what's going on here"? Something that says, "I will never be part of a class action suit"? Something that says that I'm bound and gagged, but I do this work because I need to do that work? The fear that keeps us from standing up and doing the right thing is that space where Jesus and God present with us now dwells and calls us to be. Was Jesus sleeping his placid indifference or an act of utter confidence? What do you think? I really don't care. Do you? An act of utter indifference or an act of confidence? They've got this. You've got this. I'm your pastor, but you've got this, church. I can sleep in the stern. I can go on vacation, and you've got this. That's what Jesus was trying to teach them. And maybe he was simply exhausted. Maybe he was showing them the importance of taking a break, taking a time out, taking our foot off the gas, all of those metaphors, where we breathe, where we find Sabbath, where we pay attention. Friends, these times call us back to spiritual practices that are life and soul saving. It's important that we get out there, that we take the risk, that we cross the borderlands, that we risk changing ourselves, as we certainly have in relationship with Alberto and his family and all the mission trips and all the Primavera and Casa Maria and all the ministries that we do. And it also calls us to take care of ourselves as much as we can. So our hospitality program offers emergency housing for people who are at risk and vulnerable. Our call to care team calls and sends cards and makes visits. Church is a place where we banish harmful spirits, where we welcome outsiders and disadvantaged people, where we restore people to their fullness in community, where we expose the lies that prop up counterfeit standards of greatness, and where we save lives and souls. Peace, be still. Jesus breathes peace on his disciples when he comes back after his crucifixion. People who've betrayed him, people who've denied him. Diana went home to Mary and to make peace with her relatives before she was killed. Did she know? I doubt it. But still she did it because it was the right thing to do. Mary Oliver, in her poem, The Summer Day, writes of an encounter with a grasshopper who, she says, quote, has flung herself out of the grass, end quote, into Mary Oliver's hand. You know those moments where suddenly something or someone is right there and you have a chance to notice? A bird, a breath, a breeze, a sunrise, a smile, a friendship. Mary Oliver says, I don't know exactly what prayer is, but I do know how to pay attention, to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down into the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. For me, that's a day of anarchy, which is usually Monday, where I get up and say, what do I want to do? What do I need to do? Occasionally, I stay in my jammies all day long, not very often. It's sabbatical for me. Sometimes that doesn't work, so I find other places. Diana had the knack of falling down, kneeling down in the grass. And so this sermon I dedicate to her. May we all have lives of irritating cheerfulness and deep, deep compassion for each other and for this world. Amen.